This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Friday, April 1st, 2011. I'm Caleb Brown. Federal spending is out of control, but if you think Tea Party-backed Republicans are getting tough, think again. Votes on spending cuts have routinely failed in this GOP-controlled House, and the prospects for cutting even a paltry $61 billion out of the federal budget may be wishful thinking. Tad DeHaven, budget analyst at the Cato Institute, comments. When it comes to spending cuts, why does compromise always mean less or fewer dollars cut?
Well, I think what we're looking at right now is a political exercise. I think that it's human nature that you have one number and somebody else wants a different number, so you split the difference, or at least that's the assumption that Democrats are operating under right now. It's an interesting dynamic because John Boehner and the House leadership and the Republican side find themselves in sort of a bind. They realize that they were put into power by an electorate that was hungry for substantial spending cuts. At the same time, they don't want a government shutdown. They don't want to get blamed for it from an unsympathetic media. And so they have to figure out a way. This would be Boehner. He has to try and figure out a way to make an agreement, make it a deal with Democrats without looking like a complete sellout. And so that's why we've gone from $60 billion. Now they're talking about $33 billion. But let's step away from the $66 billion to $33 billion. Certainly for most folks out there, that's a lot of money. But in terms of how much money the federal government spends, that's like lint in Uncle Sam's pocket. We're scheduled to spend $3.8 trillion this year. We're scheduled to have a deficit of $1.6 trillion. The interest on the debt alone is supposed to be $207 billion this year. And Republicans and Democrats have spent the last month or so arguing over $60 billion in cuts, and now we might get $33 billion in cuts. I would like the American people to look at this spectacle, to look at this three-ring circus in Washington, and ask themselves, why have we given these men and women control over 25% of the economy? That's how much money the federal government is now spending in terms of GDP. 25%, one quarter. It's just not the finances, but the control over our lives. So I would hope that folks step back, look at this nonsense, and realize that it's gone too far, that we need to decentralize, to roll back the power and control that Washington politicians have over our lives. The government is not some grand altruistic master. It's made up of fallible human beings.
When you have actually put spending cuts before the U.S. House, when you put them up for a vote, they routinely fail. This House.
Well, there's no doubt about it. In fact, when they offered amendments to the original H.R. 1, the continuing resolution as passed in the House that would cut funding by $61 billion, there was hundreds of amendments offered. And in particular, House conservatives offered an amendment to cut another $22 billion off of that. Well, Eric Cantor and Kevin McCarthy from California, two other members of the House Republican establishment, they voted against it. And so when you can't even get your own so-called conservatives to go along with a little extra $22 billion in cuts, how are you going to get everybody else? I think something that hasn't been pointed out is that what we're looking at here is discretionary spending. And we separate discretionary into the so-called non-defense and the defense. Now, Republicans intentionally left defense off the table. They've focused it all on non-defense spending, non-defense discretionary spending. And I think that's a strategic mistake. I don't understand how we're supposed to get, or how they're supposed to get, support from Democrats on going after domestic programs and entitlements and such if Republicans continue to treat every single dollar spent on the military as sacrosanct, and that has to change.
A point that Ed Crane likes to make a lot when talking about Republicans and spending cuts, and Senator Rand Paul has also made this point in actual legislation, which is if you're going to cut programs, it's not enough to cut percentages from programs, you should be naming things that should be removed, deleted wholesale from the federal government.
Republicans that are serious about cutting government have to make the moral and philosophical case that we do not need these programs. It can't just be about dollars and cents. It can't just be a matter of, well, we can't afford this program. Otherwise, it'd be nice if we kept this program. The mentality should be that we're running a $1.6 trillion surplus this year. That should be the mentality. And so you have to make the argument to the American people that we don't need this stuff. The assumption in the media when they write about these budget cuts is they go and they find three or four anecdotes about, you know, Mary Lou up in New York or, you know, Joe Lunchbucket out in Kansas, and a particular program is going to be cut. And the media operates on the assumption that these individuals have no other options. And I think it's important for those who, you know, policymakers that really want to cut, to explain that it is not the ideal to have the federal government running these programs to begin with. We should be looking to at least empower the states and local governments to reassume responsibility for the things that state and local governments traditionally held domain over. But we should also be looking towards, you know, our neighbors and our families and our churches and our civic organizations. It is, you know, things such as welfare, and especially in an economic downturn where people truly are in need. The federal government is a horribly inefficient, wasteful mechanism for helping those in need. And it also represents coercion. And I think that sometimes we lose sight of the fact that government is not charity. Government is force. Government is inherently violence. And I think we bring the best out in ourselves, and we bring the best out in individuals in this country when we voluntarily go out of our way to help people and not just rely on bureaucrats and selfish politicians in Washington, D.C.
Fiscal conservatives have championed a lot of what Paul Ryan has said. He will be coming out with his budget pretty soon, which, you know, if history is any guide, typically involves a lot more and a lot more dramatic spending cuts than either leadership in the Republican or Democratic parties are generally willing to consider.
The good news is that Paul Ryan has demonstrated a willingness to address the 800-pound gorilla in the room. And that's the so-called entitlement programs, chiefly Medicare, Social Security, and Medicaid. So I would look for reforms in this new budget from Ryan. I'm almost also interested to see if defense will be addressed. And again, I find it hard to imagine that Republicans are going to get support from Democrats in tackling entitlements if Republicans aren't willing to put the sacred cow of so-called national defense on the table. And I think, again, it comes down to explaining to the American people. It comes down to being honest. We almost shouldn't even call it national defense, but it should be called military spending. A great argument, and our scholars here at Cato make it time and time again, a lot of our so-called national defense is basically just foreign aid. We're basically subsidizing the welfare states of Europe. We're paying for the defense of these countries in Asia. And when you ask people in polls which programs would you like to most get rid of, international aid is always at the top of folks' list. And so I think there's a if the argument's framed in that sense that a lot of our military spending is basically foreign aid, I think we can get some cross-aisle agreement on limiting it, and hopefully we can get some bipartisan support on tackling entitlements.
Tad DeHaven is a budget analyst at the Cato Institute. Read more of his work at cato.org.